Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2914. It's 2914. Tonight we're going to have on Michelle Bluss. She's going to be telling us her story. And I can tell you, you better put your seatbelt on, because Michelle has been through quite a few things, including all kinds of ritual abuse and everything else. So anyway, yeah, it's going to be a good night, good show. And so let me read the NASCA mission statement first. I have to do that. And we have a singleness of purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. Number one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. And boy, it does. When's the last time you got your house broken into? I've had that happen several times. Okay. Number two, offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, we offer an awful lot more than that at, this is just a little tidbit at NASCA, all right? And people who are not familiar, you know, with our show, should go to our NASCA website. That's NASCA.org, NASCA.org. And it has so much information on there and so many links that you can open. And a lot of it's self-explanatory. It tells you how to speak to your children, what ages to start, what to say, what not to say, all different kinds of things that people need to know, you know, not just to cross your children across the street, no. Or tell them about the guy who's going to jump out behind the bush. I'm not saying they don't. But the point is, they need to know a lot more than that, because we don't live in an innocent world. So we cannot keep our children as innocent children. They should need to be educated children. So the adults have to be educated first. But there's all kinds of information in there on the website to teach you how to go about doing that. And I think that's another way, you know, coming forward, telling a story, all the things that we do here, we do have a lot of awareness now. That's why we have so many books now and everything. When I wrote my book, there was only one book on Amazon, like mine. That's it. That tells you how long ago I wrote it. But the point is this, you know, over the last 11 years, now we have tons of books. And this is good. That's one way, right? Books, music, art. A lot of people are artists. There's all different kinds of ways. They're bloggers with poetry, all kinds of ways, you know, to get the word out and to educate people. All right. So let me get that out of the way, and I'm going to go to Michelle. Now, Michelle is a minister. She's also a counselor. She's a person who's been out on the street like me. We all understand, she and I understand each other perfectly. And she's going to tell her story tonight. And so I'm just going to hand it over to her. Go ahead, Michelle.
Okay. Hello, everyone. Glad to be here. good to be here with my sisters. My story begins at the age of 2. So I'm going to begin with this. My mother is from Kingston, Jamaica. My grandfather was a voodoo priest and a devil worshiper. And they had, my mother, 22 siblings. She was one of 22. And so they lived and believed in the dark world. My father, it was 17 of siblings of him, and his family practiced witchery and witchcraft. So I was born into darkness, and I was born into both sides of my family tree, being devil worshippers and being in the occult. My abuse began at 2 years old. It was mentally, emotionally, and physical. I was beaten. If it wasn't every day, it was every other day, and it began at 2. By the time I turned 6, that abuse kept going. When I turned 6 years old is when I was introduced to sexual. And it wasn't through my side of my mother's family. It was actually my father's mother who was married. She got married. She wasn't married to my father's father. He left her because she wouldn't stop drinking. So she kept my father away from him. And she got married to someone else. The other 16 siblings came in with his real father getting remarried, having 16 children. So my dad was brought up with abandonment, felt like his real father didn't want or love him, but my grandmother kept him from his father because she couldn't have what she wanted, which was to be married to him, but she couldn't stop drinking. I'm saying all this to say that when my grandmother, who was my father's mother, got married, I thought this man was my real grandfather. So I didn't know anything about my dad's original father. I didn't know any of that stuff. I thought Nelson, who my mother was married to, was my real grandfather. He started messing with me at the age of 6 years old. He introduced me to sex. He introduced me to porn. He introduced me to a lot of literature that was absolutely sexual explicit. And then I was introduced into his occult. My grandparents had a lot of land in the country, and they had a barn house, a well, horses. I mean, they had all that stuff. And my grandfather would take me in the barn, and I would sit there and watch him with other adults where they were doing sexual explicit things, doing sacrifices of animals. And when I turned 7, now I was introduced to all this first before he started putting his hand on me, my grandfather. When I turned 7, they started doing sacrifices, like I said, of animals, and I seen animals being sacrificed. But then when it came to children, I was made to leave the barn. So I'm just going to leave it like that because people have asked me, have you actually saw them sacrifice children? No, but I know when I saw children go in the barn, I didn't see them come back out. So I'm going to leave it at that. So this is the stuff, keep in mind, as a little girl being introduced to all this through my grandfather, but yet at home I'm being mentally and physically severely abused. And on top of that, I'm watching my father abuse my mother. If she wasn't being beat every day, it was every other day, dragging her own blood. So this is my memory. This is all I saw and knew, and this is what I grew up in. My grandfather, I remember one time I was in the barn and they were having group sex. It was a lot of women and men, and they were smearing themselves in blood and having sex. And I remember when somebody tried to come near me, and I heard this voice, you know. The things I'm going to say to you as far as, like, the devil and all this, some people might not believe in that, but I know the things that I saw and I know the things that I heard. And then, of course, being groomed to come into the occult. They were not allowed to touch me. I just was made to watch a lot of sexual explicit things and sacrifices of things. My grandfather messed with me from the age of 6 to 12. And at 12 years old, apparently I learned at that time that I gotten too old for him. Because he called me upstairs, and let me say this, every summer we spent time with my grandparents. So it was every summer and every weekend. And my grandmother was an absolute alcoholic, but she was never abusive to me. She loved me. I loved her. But when she get drunk, she passes out. She don't wake up. And that's when my grandfather did the things that he did. This particular time at the age of 12, now 6 years on past, and he asked me to come upstairs, and I assumed it was going to be doing what I always been doing with him because I was protecting my sister. One day he said, go downstairs and bring your sister up here. And I said, no, Grandpa, I'll do whatever you want. I know what you like. Don't touch my sister. And he said, I don't want you no more. Now go get your sister. And that, at that moment is when I got the strength because it went beyond me. When he said he wanted my sister, and keep in mind, I'm 12, so that means she's 5. The rage and hatred came up to the fact where there is no way in hell I was going to let him touch my sister. And but I had received power. I had received power from the dark world. And I looked at him and I said, if you touch my sister, I will kill you dead. And I don't know what he saw looking at me, but I saw the fear. And he told me to get out of his room. And I went downstairs and grabbed my sister and I held her tight. So at 12 years old, that was the last time that my grandfather ever touched me. At this point, I was really, really into the occult and powers. So I continue to go to the Bourne House when they do their rituals and stuff like that. And we're talking about pentagrams on the ground and candles in every corner and drinking of blood. This is the stuff that I was introduced to for years. And going to my grandparents' house was like going to Disneyland to me because it was very horrifically abusive at home. My father, like I said, he would beat me and my siblings, and I would get the worst of it, though, between my siblings, not my mother. My mother got it bad, and I got it bad. But my siblings, they got beaten, but not as bad as my mother and I did. I remember one time my dad, we had a habit of we had so much fear in us that when my dad would pull up into his station wagon, we would literally knew the sound of the station wagon, and we knew the sound of his boots when he would walk up to the steps and open the door. And this was a regular thing for years, beginning at 2 years old and up. And one day, I decided to stand up to him. This is when I was 9. He came in the door and he was pissy drunk and he holler out, you know, where are you, B? You know, calling my mother these names. And I need for the audience and people to understand that my mother, I looked at her as pure, a saint, because she was a virgin when she met my father. She never been with any other man. She never was allowed to go outside of the house. I mean, he was just a Hitler, but, you know, ruling the house with an iron fist. And everyone feared him. But getting back to what I was saying, he come in the door, he's stumbling, he's hauling out B. And so I decided to go and agitate him. And I said something, and I knew what I said would make him react. And it did. He punched me, threw me down, started hitting me in my face. And I don't know how many times he hit me until he passed out. So when I got up, my dress, my clothes was bloody. My face is bloody. And my mother looked at me, and she whispered the words, "I'm sorry." But I, and at the, at my age at 9, I knew what she was trying to say to me. See, understand that my mother has been abused so bad by my dad that she, how could she protect me when she couldn't even protect her? My, I saw how afraid my mother was of my dad. We saw that. I want to go a little backwards. When I was 2 years old, I remember he was sitting in the living room. And, you know, my mother treating him like, I mean, to me, he treated my mother like a slave. You know, she brought his food on the tray, and he was eating in the living room his breakfast. It was in the morning. I'll never forget. And I reached behind him to put my arms around his neck. He reached behind him and grabbed my onesie. I had on a onesie. I'm sure everybody knows what a onesie is. And when he grabbed me by my onesie, and I was two years old, he threw me against the wall, up in the air. I hit the top of the wall because I slid all the way down the wall. And I just looked at him. And the look that I gave him reminded me of a movie Joan Crawford's movie, the woman that played Joan Crawford, when she adopted the little girl and that little boy and how she abused them in the movie. And Joan Crawford threw some Ajax on the kitchen bathroom floor and told that little girl to scrub with a toothbrush because she hung up expensive clothes on wire hangers, even though the little girl didn't do it. She didn't even have no idea where the hangers came from. And even though what happened to me, when I watched that movie, I had that same look that she had, and it was, this man is crazy. And I'm 2 years old saying, this man is crazy. Like, I'm showing love because it wasn't shown that in the house, but TV showed that. So I figured if I hugged my dad, I would get that back, and I didn't get that back. So I was never a kid that would, you know, hear the words, I love you, from my dad. He never hugged. It was none of that. My mother gave us love the best way she could. And me and my siblings knew that my mom was so afraid of my dad, and we wanted so bad to protect her. And I was the only one. I got brothers, but they wouldn't stick up. They wouldn't throw themselves in the midst in front of my dad to take the worst part of the beating. I did that. So not only my mom wouldn't get beat, but so they wouldn't get beat. Going a little further backwards before I go forwards, you know, I was introduced to alcohol because my dad was an alcoholic, and we had a after-hour bar down in our basement. My mother would do all the cooking. They sell food, and my dad sold liquor, and people would play cards and, you know, and stuff like that down there. And what would happen is when they play the music and they drink and they get the dancing, some of them wouldn't finish their cups. So by the time everybody's passed out, and I see these cups full of liquor or liquid, I didn't know what it was, I decided to drink it. Why? Because that earlier that evening, I was on the steps and I was watching all these people partying and having fun and drinking, and then some people would fall down and hit their head, little blood cry, but they would laugh. They didn't even feel it because they were so full of that alcohol. So I'm like, well, whatever that is they're drinking, I want some of that, so when my dad beat me, I wouldn't feel the pain. So I wanted to mention that. When I got to be, I remember at the age of 10, my dad did this ritual, which was called the cold tub. Excuse me. And what that was, when it was time to be beat or whatever, and I found I was the only one that ever experienced this. My siblings never experienced what I'm about to tell to you. So what it was, my dad told me, B, go upstairs and turn the water on, and before you put the plug in, you make sure it's cold. Well, back in the 60s, you know, like we had those old tubs, and they were like them deep sink-in tubs, and you put the little stopper in, and before you do, you can run your water. If you run cold water, you can literally see the cold. If you run hot water, you can literally see the steam. And so my dad would tell me to run that cold water real good and then put the stopper in to fill the tub up. And then I had to stand in detention. And then he said, little B, is the water filled? Is the tub filled? And I said, sir, yes, sir. And that's how we had to talk to him. And so then he said, you know what to do next. And I take all my clothes off, and I got in the tub. This was at 11 years old, but keep in mind, this wasn't the first time this thing happened, and my body was used to it because it started younger than that. So I just got immune to it. So my father came upstairs, and he came in the bathroom, and he came over to the tub, and he grabbed me by my head and submerged me in the water, you know, several times. And then he reached down and grabbed my legs. So he had both my feet, ankles and feet, and he would dump me in and out of the water, in and out of the water, in and out of the water. And he had a switch. And the switch, he started switching my body, you know, and I was screaming because when he switched, it was just cut open wounds. And I would, you know, and as I'm looking down, because I'm upside down, I can see my blood from my body dripping in the bathtub. And he kept switching me until the whole tub of water turned red. And then he dropped me head first and went out the door. And so that's one of the incidents. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so heavy, heavy duty. I know what those switches feel like, too. They leave welts on you, bleed. I want to go to the panel, okay, and give them a chance to say hello and ask you a question or something. And go to Annie first. Annie, go ahead, and then we'll go down to Roberta. Go ahead, Annie.
Okay, well, Michelle, thank you for sharing your story so far. I just have to say it's just so awful, and I'm so sorry that those things happened to you. And sadly, I have heard other people talk about occult abuse, so it isn't all new to me, and it's just awful, and I'm very sorry. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Yeah. Let's go down to Roberta. Roberta, you have questions or a comment you want to
yes.
make?
Yes. Oh, yes. Hello, everybody. Hello, Michelle. Thank you. Well, I just don't know what to say exactly. I'm just now starting with my healing process, and I got a lot of memory blocks. But I do
mm-hmm.
know I went through gang occult stuff too. But I think it's just too traumatic, and God's not going to allow me to search it out right now, you know, because I just now started my healing process. So, you know, I had to overcome my fears and everything. So, but I don't know what to say, because I've heard similar things happen to some of my elder people in my family. I'm just trying to picture that, and it hurts. It hurts me to think you had to suffer that. So, I guess, now that I'm going through my healing process, I can love myself now and go and realize that no matter what other people felt of my body was and what it's supposed to mean to them, it's what my body is and what it means to me now, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't even went deep into the occult yet, which I will in about less than 10 minutes. I wanted to finish other little things that my dad did. I got hit in the head with an iron. I got hit in the head with guns in a, you know, the end of a butt of a gun. One incident where we were never allowed to call my dad. We had to call him by his first name. And even though I was going through all this horrific stuff, I demanded such respect in the streets, you know. So the neighborhood kids were afraid of me, okay. But one day they dared me. We were sitting out on my porch, and they said, you know, Michelle, why you always call your dad Ernest by his first name? Why don't you call him Dad? And so to me, you know, I'm like, I can call him Dad whenever I want to. They said, we dare you. No, you won't. I said, I'll call him dad. And as soon as I said that, who pulls up in the driveway? My dad. So he comes and he's walking up and everybody's saying, hey, Mr. Ernest, hey, Mr. Ernest. And he go, mm-hmm. And then when he took a step above me to go on in the house, that's when I said, hey, dad. And that's all I remember. When I came to, I was laying on my back and I was choking. And I didn't understand why I was choking. But I know it was a chair over me. And my dad was sitting in that chair. And he had a double-barrel shotgun. And the end of the gun, but the gun was in my mouth. So I don't know how long I was passed out. But when I came to, the gun was in my mouth. I turned my head. And when I turned my head, all that liquid came out of my mouth. And when I looked and saw what it was blood. I was choking in my own blood. And my dad said to me, B, did I tell you not to ever call me MF Dad? And I said, yes, sir. He said, don't you ever call me Dad again. And if you do, I will blow your freaking, which is effing, MF brains out. Do you understand? Yes, sir. Now get in the house because you done made me mess up. You mess up your dress. Now keep in mind, he beat me, and the blood went on my dress, and he said I did it. And I came in the house. He left. I came in the house, and my mother was just crying, and she grabbed me and took my little dress off, and she was like, I'm so sorry. And I said, Mom, it's not your fault. It's okay. You're suffering just like we are. And I'm like 11. So let's go a little further. Another thing that my dad did to me. I was still, this happened to me when I was probably 10. I was in the living room, and my dad grabbed me by my hair. I was sitting there on the couch looking at TV. And he grabbed me by my hair, opened the closet, and threw me in the closet and broke the light bulb. He had those hanging light bulbs, and he broke it and locked the door. So I was used to sitting in the dark. That didn't bother me. I just didn't move because I knew it was glass above me. And I said, well, as soon as he leave, my mom will let me out. The next thing I know, it took maybe a good 20 minutes, I'm hearing him screaming at my brothers. And I heard him say, take these bags and go out into the woods and fill it up, like I said, fill it up. I had no idea what he was telling them to fill it up with. And then they came back, and he opened the closet door, and the light from the living room I was able to see. I saw these two bags, and I just seen the bags moving. And he threw the bags in there with me, and I started screaming. And I just kept feeling these things crawling all over me and biting me. Every time I was fighting, it was biting me. I screamed. I heard a punch in the living room. My mother was saying, no, don't do that, don't do that. And he punched her and said, shut up, B, you better not do nothing. And he's sitting there laughing. And I'm screaming and screaming. I don't know how much I was being bit all over. And they were crawling in my mouth and nose. I felt legs. I didn't know what it was. It was lots of them. I passed out. When I came to, my mom had put me to the emergency room. Come to find out, he made my brothers go in the woods and fill up the bag, two bags full of spiders. And they counted 250 bites all over my body.
Did you say spiders? Spiders?
Yes, spiders.
Ugh. All right, go ahead.
And that's why I don't like, and that's my phobia, even to this day.
I can't stand spiders.
And so and that's the reason why I don't like spiders, because I got tormented. My dad, he got scared. They said I wouldn't come too. So he had already told my mother what I better say. And so the doctors and them, they were out of the room, and when I opened my eyes, she said, you tell them that you walked in the woods and you walked into a big web, So that's what I said. I walked, they said, and so the doctor came in and said, oh, my God, it's only a miracle that this girl is alive. And And he said, you must have walked into a nest. And they believed it. They believed what I was told to say. And so I had this fear of spiders. I was angry. And for like 3 days, my dad didn't beat me because he felt sorry. You know, he was just nice for 3 days at me. And then once I started healing up and then he was back to himself. My dad used to hit me in the head with broomsticks, pieces of wood, guns, iron boards, grab me and throw me against the wall, the cold tub action, beaten with a switch, punched in the mouth with his fist, hand first, several times, knocked me out unconscious, you know. So that was something that I was used to dealing with. Now I'm going to go into the occult. By this time, I'm 13 years old. It was the summertime, and my grandfather went to my grandparents' house. We were there for the summer, and I kept hearing him say it was time. He said to me, you know it's time now. You belong to Satan. And so, of course, you understand I got all this anger in me and hatred towards my dad. And that's when they made me a priestess. I became a high priestess. And it was some of the witches and stuff were angry because I'm a kid. And they had to listen to me. I was given power of it beyond imagination. And I wanted to, like, take this power and destroy my dad. But the demons said I couldn't do that. So what I did was I came home. By this time, I'm in the occult. I'm going to Satan's church. God has his churches. Satan has his churches. By this time, I had already elevated in advance of my powers. I would levitate furniture. I would walk through walls. I would cast spells. And I did all that. And it was a norm to me. That's all I knew. I remember I was 14 years old. I was sitting downstairs in the living room watching TV. And then I heard my dad call my name. And so I came upstairs and I said, yes, sir. And he said, tell your mammy to go fix me something to eat. And something just clicked. I snapped. At that point, I started thinking about all that I went through, all that my mother went through, all that my siblings went through, all this horrific stuff that he did to us, starting at the age of 2. I couldn't take it no more. And so I came down the steps, and halfway down the steps, I said, Ma. She said, yeah, baby. I said, your master said fix him something to eat. And then I came on down the rest of the steps, right? Next thing I know, I heard all this rumbling, falling and stuff. And I come to find out my dad was trying to put his pants on. He got angry, you know, and he had his pants on backwards, come running down the steps. And he came in, because I went into the kitchen where my mother was, and he said, bitch, what did you say? And I said, I told my mama to fix you something to eat. He said, nah, bitch, say what you said. Say what you said, and you know what you said. And I said, you said, I said, your master said, fix you something to eat. And I looked at him, didn't even blink. Next thing I know, I was standing in the kitchen by the cupboard. Matter of fact, I was in front of the cupboard. Let me explain what the cupboard is. Back in those days, in the late 60s, you know, my mom had a big cupboard, and she had a tree trunk sitting right in the middle of it and an axe on it, because they had this thing that you sharpen your axe, and you sharpen your axe, and you get it real sharp, you know. My dad would go in the woods and chop woods and, you know, stuff like that, you know, or kill animals or whatever, you know. So your master said, I got smart with him, and I didn't even blink. My dad hauled off and hit me so hard that I fell backwards because the axe was upright. I fell on the axe, and my mother let out a scream, and she said the name of Jesus. Now, understand, my mother, out of all her siblings who were witches and warlocks, she did not believe in that. She loved God, okay? And when she said this name, she grabbed me because I fell on the axe, and she touched my back, and she said, "Oh, my God, thank you, Jesus." Because the axe supposed to have been cut. There was nothing in the natural, I should have been cut, literally sliced into my back. But the God that my mother served heard her cry. And when she called his name, he did what he did. My mother slid to the stove because when she let go of me, you know, like when you get up off the floor, you would take your hand to help lift you up. I didn't do that. My whole body just went straight up. And my eyes were black. There were no pupils. And my father looked, and he was like, "Oh, just go, whatever." And he ran up out of there. He ran up out of there. And my mother started touching me and saying Jesus and talking in tongues. I didn't listen to none of that. I was in full-blown in the occult. I was in full-blown as a witch. I was in full-blown as a high priestess. My heart was black and cold and numbed. So then let me say this part. During this time at 14, even though my grandfather stopped messing with me, I had two uncles and a cousin that had started up. So I was still being sexually abused. A lot of people ask me, why didn't I tell my mom? The reason why I didn't tell my mother, because even though all this was going on with me, I felt like if I tell, then I won't be able to go where I was going to get freedom. See, when I was being sexually abused, to me, it was just a moment, just a few minutes. Once it's over, then I look at the overall part of just being away from home, because to me, home was horrific. I know that might not make sense, but as a little girl, I did out of body, out of mind. It's like when my grandfather used to have sex with me, and I would stand in the corner, and I watched him do the things that he did to my body. So at that time, I was grateful being in the occult. I was grateful having those powers. I was able to not be able to feel until I put my spirit back in my body, and I was able to feel all those things that was going on with my body. So at that point, I wanted to kill my dad. Let's go back to the kitchen. You know, my mom screamed, and she grabbed me, and then I sat straight up like some exorcist child, you know. And I said, "I got to get out of here." And she said, "Baby, don't leave me." See, it's always, you would think that, we would want our parents not to leave us. My mother said that because even though she was still getting beaten, it was days where she was spared from getting beaten because of me.
Yeah.
And so if I leave, it's just going to go back to the way it first began. Because she shared this with me later. But I said to my mother when I was 14, I had a white shirt and it was nothing but red. It was bloody. And I said, "Mom, if I don't leave here now, I'm going to kill him." I had so much rage in me.
Mm-hmm.
And my brothers and them came in, letting them know what was happening. And they grabbed my mother, and my middle brother looked at me. He said, "I'll see you soon." He knew I was leaving. I left home for 3 months. I was hiding in different people's homes and stuff, really my cousin's house on my dad's side. And what happened was I was gone for 3 months, and that fourth month I got my family, my dad and them called my cousin, kind of found out my dad knew where I was, but he just didn't come to get me. He was, I don't know if he was afraid of me or what, but he just didn't come and get me. And then he called their house, which is his nephew's house, my cousin, and I got on the phone, and he said, I thought he was just going to scream or cuss me out, call me these. He said, "Your mother's in the hospital. She got tubes in her. She might not make it. She had a heart attack and a stroke. I need you to come home for your mom." I dropped the phone, and I told my cousins and them, and I knew what hospital, take me to the hospital. I got to the hospital, UC Hospital, went in there, my mother's with tubes all in her body. And I stayed there all night holding her hand, saying, I'm a devil worshiper. And I'm getting mad at Satan because I'm asking him to make my mother's eyes open, wake her up. Satan don't do nothing good. Satan don't do nothing good. And Satan don't bless you with nothing good. He's evil. So I took a spiritual beating that night, and I'll explain that in a second, because I said the name of the God that my mother served. I said, Jesus, you, my mother, sit and read your word and talk to you every day. You, this Jesus, I'm talking to you. I'm talking about when I used to watch my mother lay in a pool of blood and would drag her body to the end of the room and go sit at a table stand with a lamp and a Bible and pray to you. I'm talking to you. Spare her life. Don't let her die. And in the middle of the morning, my mother woke up, and the first face she saw was mine. And she grabbed my hand, and I told her I was sorry that I left her. I didn't leave again. But my father, he was scared of me. He said I was crazy. My mother said, you have a gift, but I had power. So at 14, my mother's eyes woke up, and at 15, I graduated from high school. And at 16, I went into the military. I started sending my mother money so she could save it for herself, because right before I went into the military, I found out that my dad had a whole another family with six other kids. And to this day, I don't even know who they are. We got six, me and my siblings got six other siblings, because he had two houses and two households. And I need to go back to something because it just came into my mind. When I was in kindergarten, it was this young lady named Robin, and she was my best friend, and I was her best friend. And she only knew my first name. And one day, you know how you in school, the teacher would say, we'll call your name, and you say, here? But this time, the teacher was calling our full name. So when they said my full name, and I said, here, my girl, my best friend, whispering, she'd say, that's your last name? And I said, yeah. She said, we'll talk at recess. I said, okay. So then at recess, she came up to me, and she's like, you know, my sister go with Ernest so-and-so, this man. And I said, that's my dad. She said, that's your dad? Oh, we're more than blood sisters. And she was hugging me. I said, what do you mean? She said, because he always said that he's going to marry my sister because he has four kids and a maid.
Yeah, geez. Oh.
Called my mother a maid. My mother who was a virgin. See, her father, my mother's father, they all from Kingston, Jamaica. And my dad was in the military. So when he went to Jamaica, he bought my mother and brought her back to the States and gave her to my grandmother and raised her. He got her at 13. And when she turned 17, my father married her and had all of us. What is my point of that story? My point is, I looked at my mother as pure and innocent. She'd never been with no man. He began beating my mother from by the time he married her. So how can you call? But that's what they do. They brainwash you. They make you feel belittled, you know. And my mother never been with no other man. All she did was take care of him and his children. And he goes out and cheats and have other women and have all these kids. So when I found all that stuff out and I realized, you know, we didn't deserve to be treated this way, but I'm going to kill him. I wrote in journals, plot, me and my brothers, how we were going to kill my dad. And I wouldn't have lost no sleep. That's just the way it was. When I went to the military, I got full blown in my craft and my gifts from the devil. I got stationed in New Orleans, Louisiana. And down there, the Creole, that's all they do, is voodoo. I learned voodoo. I already had the witches gift. I was already high priest. So it was like, it was a setup. They knew I was there. And I got introduced to that world. And I used to cast spells. I used to have military personnel, and when they got to know, they knew I was one of the ones that can cast spells. They would pay me to cast spells on people, or whether it's love spells for a person to fall in love with them, or let a person get sick. And all that is real, and I did all that. I used to get raped in the spirit realm if I was disobedient, or if I didn't bring enough souls to Satan, then he would send his demons to rape me at night. And I felt like I was mentally crazy because it was like, who can I tell that this is really happening to me? So, but it's been going on for years. And I didn't get set free until I became an adult and be who I am today. But let's fast forward. So I want you to know, all during that time in the military, I was modeling on the weekends. My career was great. I ended up getting raped in the military. You know, I came out and I went spiraling when I came back home. Another thing I went through, I was kidnapped and held against my will for 3 days, bind, rope tied up to a bed with my arms stretched out and my legs stretched out. And after 3 days, I had to do a out of body, out of mind, to do a seducing, to make this man, whoever he was, because I was blindfolded, to think that I liked what he was doing. And I was able to escape. I talked him into untying me, let me take a shower, and go buy something sexy so we could spend a wonderful time together. Sick, but that's what I did, to play it, to get this man away from me. When I heard his car went away, I couldn't hardly see. I was blindfolded for 3 days, but I was naked. I couldn't find any clothes, so... But I touched around. I saw this glass patio door. So I wrapped it was sheets on the bed. So I wrapped my body with one sheet and took the other sheet over my head. Went to one end of the wall and ran as fast as I can to that glass patio, and ran through it and broke it. I was bloody. Walked through the woods. When I finally was able to find a road and got on the road, I seen this car coming. I'm screaming and waving. And I got in, the man said, oh, my God, what happened to you? And I said, I was held against my will. I was raped. And then after a while, as he's going down the road, he said, well, I might as well pull over and get me some.
Oh, Lord Jesus.
I went into shock. This man raped me and got out of his car, opened the door, and kicked me out of his car. By this time, I totally had a nervous breakdown. I was in shock. I'm walking down this road, bloody, naked, until I saw these siren lights. When I heard, and I seen the sirens, passed out. When I woke up, I was in the hospital. My mother and them already had missing person reports on me. This was big news because the person who kidnapped and took me was a, listen, I'm telling y'all, I already felt like I was in a Lifetime movie. Let me tell you this. Come to find out, the man who took me was a serial killer. When they was able to find me and I was able to help them trace where this man lived and stuff, and I was describing this wooded area, it was big woods. It was this man, he had a lot of land. And he had a big, gigantic house. Looked like, I mean, like it was like a mansion or something. But he had body parts, women buried in his ground, in the front and backyard, women bodies buried in the walls of his house, women bodies cut up in jars in his refrigerator, women bodies that was in freezers, and I was the one that got away.
Wow.
I was the one that got away. At this point, I was totally gone. I had a nervous breakdown. They had me in the hospital, and then they escorted for me to get back home. And when I got back home, I got flew back home. I went to my mother's home. I totally had a nervous breakdown. I totally, totally shut down. When I went to my mother's house, it was when I got there, my dad wasn't there. And I'm like, I can't stay here. So my sister said, you can come and stay with me. So I would go visit my mom during the day when my dad was at work. And so I happened to walk around downtown Cincinnati. And my dad had he had his business. And I didn't even know I was going to walk into his business. So I got a fake hi. And, you know, he was like, how you doing? What are you doing down? He had his one of his war friends, veteran war friends, were down there talking to him. And then he said, "Yeah, Clyde, you remember Michelle, don't you?" And he looked at me, little, this is Michelle. But when he looked at me, and like he was fascinated. He was looking me up and down. He was intrigued. See, even though you look at this body or you see something beautiful, it was ugly and cut up on the inside. But by this time, I hated men. My point was to use and seduce men to hurt them because I've been hurt. I've been hurt. So I said, well, I got to go, and I'm going to go get a bus because I didn't have a car at the time. And he said, oh, I can give you a ride. Is that okay with you, Ernie? He was like, sure, give my daughter a ride. I seduced that man because I knew the way he was looking at me. So let's put it this way. Within a week, I was in a condo on the hill where the white folks live, driving a Mercedes Benz and had a black credit card and a gold one. I come to find out who I was with. I was with a man who was one of the top cocaine dealers in the state of Ohio.
Yeah.
So I felt like the movie Scarface. I was drinking fine cognac and smoking a lot of cocaine.
I like that movie Scarface.
Remember when he cut the kilo open and spread it on the on that marble gold table? That's how I was living.
Yeah.
I was totally numb, and I just stayed buried in getting high and mellowing out. Going shopping, and we never had sex. He didn't force it because he knew that I was raped and kidnapped. But he fell in love with me. He wanted me, and so in the 6 month, now stay with me. In the 6 month, I realized I got a good old guy. Let me just go get some birth control pills so I can give him some. I was gonna make a romantic dinner and bubble bath and be surprised him when he get home. So I go up into the community of McMicken to go to the women's clinic to go get some birth control pills. So after they did all they got to do, the nurse came in there and said, "I'm sorry, it's too late for you to be on birth control pills." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And she said, "You're pregnant." That's all I remember. When I came to, I was handcuffed to the bed. They don't call the police. It was like 5 or 6 officers in this room with me. And I'm like, get this monster out of me. Get this monster out of me. And so, but two of the police officers were females, and they wanted to know what was happening. Why was this happening? Like, why was I trying to kill the baby? I'm telling you what they said. I don't remember nothing. They said I grabbed one of those sharp spatulas off the tray in the room, in the examining room, and was about to stab my stomach, and the nurses and them saved the baby in time. So after I said to them what happened, the other police officer, they were men, she's just saying that, we can charge her. They're like, no. Nah. And they were like, where does this happen at? I told them the city, in the state, where this happened. I told them I was all over the news. And that lady came back in there in 20 minutes. She had already pulled it up, read everything. She was like, oh, my God, you were raped. And so she started uncuffing me. And the other cop was like, what are you doing? She's dangerous. They're like, no. Nah. And she said, will you try anything? I said, no. But I want this baby out of me. Because I knew I wasn't with nobody. I didn't have sex with the man who I was with who was giving me a good life. Keeping me as a kept woman, living a good life that I thought. And here I am wanting to give him some and found out I was pregnant. My stomach wasn't even fat. My stomach was flat. That baby was in my hips and butt, So the doctor said, because of this circumstance, we can, you can go to Kansas. We can set up there. I can set it up, but you have to pay for it. You have to pay for this abortion. Well, back then, it would have cost me $2,800 to get an abortion in Kansas City. Kansas City was the only place that was aborting kids, aborting babies at 5 or 6 months pregnant. Well, I couldn't do that because every money I spend, it was counted for. So I felt like if I would have did that, he would have asked me, well, where's $2,800 at? I wouldn't have had nothing to show him where it's – because I could buy whatever I want. as long as he see where it's going, as long as he see it, you know. So I was, there was no way I could explain this to him. That's why I said, I got to hide it. So I told him, don't worry about it. I got back into the Mercedes Benz, drove back home, cooked, put on something sexy, waited for this man to come in, gave him some. He was at odds. So guess when I carried the baby for one, once I found that I was pregnant, knowing I was pregnant for one whole month, that's going into the seventh month. And then after the seventh month, and the eighth month was going to begin. Keep in mind, my stomach is flat. He was on his way to work in the morning. I was having my water broke, and I was having these pains, and I had to sit there and bite down. I kept snorting cocaine. And then when he left, I called my sister. The water broke because I had already told him I was. So let me fast forward. Let me forward this quickly. I met a nun. Let's go back to when I first found out I was pregnant. And I was, you know, living like Scarface, snorting cocaine, drinking cognac. And I was introduced to this nun at this homeless place for children. And when I told her what was going on, I told her about my life. She felt sorry for me. She said, why don't you stop snorting cocaine to give this baby an opportunity to be born, and we can give her for adoption, and I'll allow you to pick the parents. She befriended me. I said, okay. When I went into contractions and the water broke, I was waiting for this fool to hurry and get out of here to go to work. I grabbed a bag of cocaine. The pain was overwhelming. I had to stop the pain. I would have been screaming. So he finally got out the house. My sister came and got me, took me to the hospital. The nun already had it set up to whereas I don't want to see the baby. I don't want to know the sex of the baby. Well, God had another way that he wanted it to go. I woke up in the middle of the night, and there was a baby in my arms because the nurse didn't read the chart. She didn't read the chart that this baby could not be seen by me. And she laid the baby in my arms. And that's when I looked at the baby, and everything changed. I called this baby a monster until she came out of me. And she looked at me with those beautiful eyes, and I fell in love with my baby. But you got to understand, I wasn't healed. That was just a moment. Because when the nun found out that I saw the baby, she was upset. And the next day, she came to get that baby. And I'm holding the baby like, no, I changed my mind. She said, you're going to end up hurting that baby. You're not ready. And deep down, I knew that she was telling the truth. But I had that baby. I saw her, and I wanted her. But I knew deep down there was no way I can keep her. And I thank God that I made a decision for that nun to walk out of the hospital with my baby because I would have hurt that baby.
Yeah.
Fast forwarding, I told my parents and I told my family that the baby died, and they believed it. But every year when I was out there, self-destructing and hurting myself, I always celebrated her birthday. So, well, I'm going to go forward to this part. I met my daughter in 2009. We have a wonderful relationship today. She gave me 8 beautiful grandkids. Okay. I have, and my daughter gave me 2, and you know, Carol, I'm raising the 1. I'm just saying that we got a relationship. She don't know anything about her dad. She knows that she was a rape victim because when I gave her up, I wrote a letter, had all our information, phone number. But, of course, when she got big enough, the numbers changed, but she couldn't find us. But I found her in 2009, and we've been in a mother-daughter relationship since. I'm saying all that to say that when the devil meant for bad, God turned it into good. I went through pure hell after I gave her up because it was conscious. I felt guilty. And my daughter, who I raised, my oldest daughter, she was 3 when I gave her sister up for adoption. And I was just a lifeless, blank person. I hated men. I didn't like men, so I wouldn't allow men to take my heart for me to love them. I felt like if I seduce them and use them, I'm hurting them. I found out later I was hurting myself. I was just a person.
Yeah, but we don't know that, though, Michelle. Okay. When you get hurt so much, when you get hurt so much by men, and though they are abusers most of the time, you know, I mean, as far as sexual, that can happen. I've had friends that happen too.
I've been raised
that's just the way it happens, you know. You can't have a life, can't have a life like what you had. And a lot of what I had, okay? I mean, when you were talking, I have to say this, when you were talking about you wanted to murder your father, I get it. Because I grew up around guns, okay? I'm not afraid of guns. At any given time, I could have picked up a gun because I felt like shooting somebody in my family. And I knew that I couldn't, all right? And it was like a struggle because after things that would happen, the very, very bad things that would happen to me, and I knew that if I had a real family, they wouldn't have happened. There were a couple times in my life where I thought to myself, well, they're downstairs and I'm upstairs. And I feel like going down and getting one, and I wanted to use it. You see, there's kids that do go through with it, right? They go through it because they've been abused so much, you know.
To fast forward,
and,
I was already living a good life, so, of course, I wasn't going to go back to being no bum or being no streets or anything like that. Oh, and keep in mind, I'm about to experience homeless and eating out of garbage cans and stuff like that because I was living that fast life. I started selling drugs. I became a pimpress. I was working a Fortune 500 job at Procter & Gamble. I was around the executives, and I knew what those executive men like. So I went and got college girls and girls out to strip clubs to make extra money. You know what that's called? I didn't know that. I was a pimpress. I didn't know that. I was about the money. I was about the money. They had to give me, a cut of their money, and the men who wanted them had to give me money in order to see them. So I was making money on both ends of each woman. You know what I'm saying? So yes, I'm not proud to say that, but I was a pimpress. I was a dope dealer. You know, I had that big old white mansion with that picket fence and a little dog named Toto. Driving Mercedes-Benz, living the good life, until one day that the product that I was selling became my best friend. I ended up using my product, and I went rock bottom. I lost everything. My family turned against me. So it was times where, you know, I literally was sleeping in abandoned buildings and under the bridge and park benches and eating out of garbage cans dumpsters. So I said, well, let me pick the fancy restaurant dumpsters. So I picked fancy restaurants where they throw good food out, and I would go in a dumpster and eat, you know. So 10 years homeless. So that's why I tell people I know what it feels like to be homeless and hungry and alone and lonely. You know what I'm saying? It was times where I was seduced to the point where it was men who always wanted me and they couldn't get me. And when I needed a place to stay, I had to have sex with them just to stay at night. Because during this time was when it was wintertime and cold. And I looked at how I come to where my life was, and I didn't like it. I tried to commit suicide. I stopped counting after 36 times. The 37th time I was dead, they brought me back. So
what were you doing, popping pills or what? How did you do that?
Pills and then a lot. I took a lot of pills. I mean, they pumped my stomach. Somebody ended up calling the police or finding me, and they said, I know I'm waking up, and I'm fighting, scratching the doctor's nail. Why am I here? I'm not supposed to be here. I wanted to die. One time I walked into traffic, got hit, didn't die. Then the last time I tried to commit suicide, I cut my wrist on both. There was no that it was not in the natural that I'm not supposed to be here. But God, the God my mother served. You're gonna always hear me say that when I was telling my story. I always say the God my mother served because I hated God. I didn't want to hear His name. I served the devil, and He gave me power. So I can take a break now if anybody want to talk, and then we can go to the resolution of where I'm at today and how I overcome all that. So I'll let you go ahead, Sister Carol.
Yeah, no, you know what? I understand. But you see, don't forget, you were brought up around all that so-called power. And so all mm-hmm. these things, you know, as a child. And when you're witnessing all of that, and then you see that you were able to even scare your father with your own eyes, those black eyes. I was told that I had black eyes once. So I know what that's like when I was living in the pedophile
house. No proof. I had no proof.
I got a picture of it.
I believe you.
A school picture. I have black eyes. And mm-hmm. I know what you're talking about. And, you know, you do. You know, people like, well, I don't want to say just us, because that puts us in a different category. But people who are terribly, terribly abused, let's put it that way, they go through periods of hatred like that. They go through suicidal ideations like we both had, you and I, and as many other mm-hmm. people. Because we know what's normal. We know what it should have been. We know what it could have been, and we didn't have it. And then I got involved with people who were heavy into drugs. They were shooting mm-hmm. up heroin, and I was mm-hmm. drinking and popping pills. I was doing, you know, all mm-hmm. kinds of stuff. And I was on Quaaludes. That's what they liked in those days, Quaaludes. And
Carol, it is one thing I want to say, because it just came to my thought, and I want to say this real quick, and then I'm going to be quiet.
Go ahead.
I need for people to understand, during Halloween, when in the occult, okay, so I was a high priest and I was a black witch. And so, mm-hmm. you know, we had to, you know, they went, and Halloween is the devil's holiday, just to let everybody know. You know, I get a lot of controversy, and I look at people and laugh and say, wow, I used to be a devil worshiper. You trying to tell me about Halloween? And I used to live as a full-blown servant of the devil. The Halloween is their number one top holiday, because that's when they get what is called at one time multiple sacrifices throughout the whole world and the United States, because they know kids go out and knock on. That's what I tell people, and I push it. If you want some kids to do Halloween, let them do it. Only go take them to family and friends that you know. They put poison in candy. They put pins in candy. Anytime you hear a child getting sick or get cut, that's a sacrifice. That we hoo-hoo is what the Satans would say. They want to hoo-hoo for a kid to die. 70s and 80s, it used to be a lot of kids dying during the Halloween. It was a known fact. They talk about it all the time. You don't hear it much now. But back then you did. That was a celebration for the occult. That was a celebration for the occult, for a kid to get sick. So what they do during Halloween, as I tell people, just be around your kids. They kidnap children. That's a sacrifice. That's why the holiday is so important for Satan and his kingdom. They try to snatch kids, as many as they can, or adults for sacrifice, to kill them, to poison them, put something in their candy. And you'd be surprised who are devil worshippers. You'd be surprised. We're talking about the elite. The Illuminati and all.
Michelle, stop there for a second, because people should know this. You know, you walk into banks and say, I'll just use that. And people walk around in suits and all this sort of stuff. You walk in other places, businesses, whatever, where people look, they're very straight. They look like they're an upstanding citizen, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then,
mm-hmm.
like what I always used to say, is when the sun goes down, the true self comes out. And they're going to howl
right.
at the moon too, go right? You know, because they have their cult, they have their stuff. And you know what I'm talking about, because you've been through it. And I used to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
I had friends that were in it. But anyway, the point is this. Yeah, you don't understand, the people out there don't understand that there are evil people walking around, and in daylight and in daytime, they look like normal, regular people. And then
that's right.
later on, they go into the rituals. Yeah.
And that's what my second book is that I'm writing about. You know, it took me a long time to be obedient to God, because I was fighting it. God, ain't nobody going to believe that. He said, I need for this to be known. Satan don't want you to have it out there, but it's got to be known. People got to be aware. Satan ain't got no power over God, but Satan has power. He's real. and he goes to and fro to see who he can devour. His only purpose is to kill, steal, and destroy. And he's after our children. All this stuff in this sexual abuse, that's the devil. People don't want to hear the truth. But now, today, because I'm halfway through my book, I don't care whether you don't want to hear it or not. I'm going to tell the truth. See, no weapon formed against me shall prosper. So the devil and hell itself can't come after me because I've been marked by God. Yes, I don't no longer serve Satan. I serve Jesus Christ, my Lord and Savior, who sits on the right-hand side of God in heaven. But it didn't happen overnight, y'all. Because I remember when I first got saved and God said, I need you to relinquish your power to Satan. That means I had to willingly surrender. Guess what I said? I said, God, I like you. I just met you and everything. I want to be with you, but I'm not doing that. And he said it again. You have to relinquish your power to Satan. And I said, oh, no, I can't do that. And so I was raped and beaten for 2 years in the spirit realm from demons because I refused to give up my power. So God said that that's what was going to happen to me. So I was being tormented until I went to the church where I'm at today, and I've been there going on 25 years. I haven't looked back since.
So you see, Michelle, today you're a minister and you serve God. Okay.
Yes.
But look at the road you went down. Look at the life that you led. And then, of course, later on, it's not common. I don't want to use the word common. But, you know, you get into the drugs, you get into all the other stuff and with the cocaine. And, you know, I get it because I've seen all that stuff myself. But the people I used to hang with, okay. And I loved that movie with Al Pacino in it. You know, I understand
that. That was a life I lived.
Yeah, oh, yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of people maybe that have gone through it. Maybe there's not a lot of people have gone through quite as much as what you've gone through. I don't think there's that many. I don't know. Maybe there is. I went through some of it, yes. And sometimes I just plain walk away. I said, I got to get away from this, got to get away from this. And because I would probably pick up a gun and shoot someone because I'm not going to be hurt anymore. I had that in my family, and I had that on the street. But on the street, when I would go out on the street, Michelle, they'd take care of me. Because I was the youngest, and they take me under their wing. So I had it pretty good. I hate to say this, out on the street, because, it was hard, rough, tough, and I could go home. When the weather got too bad, I'd sneak into my basement. They never locked doors back then, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody locked the doors. So I could always go into the basement. It was a nice basement. It had a sink. It had a toilet, and I could clean myself up and so forth. And then sneak up into the kitchen because I knew they were sleeping and get food and take it back to my friends, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the way I get back and forth is there was one car. Actually, there were two cars. They weren't off as bad as we were. So they would take us back and forth. But anyway, the point is this. We know what it's like, and there are other people that know what it's like to be out on the street. There are people that have, you know, witnessed, you know, all this stuff that you're talking about. I witnessed it. I wasn't really a part of it. I could have been, but I got scared, and I ran away.
People used to prostitute when they saw me. I was a full-blown witch. I loved
it. I hear it.
When I was in it.
My mother used to tell me she was a witch. I think she was. Go ahead.
The devil don't want people to know the truth. And what I'm about to come out with in the second series, you have to know the truth of the ways of the enemy. Of the devourer. Because he's after our children. He's after every soul, but I'm talking about in particular, it's the children. It's the children. You know?
Yes, I do know. I know all too well. Let's go to Annie really quick and Roberta, because they've only spoken once, and see if they have a question to ask you or they want to make a comment. Okay, let me go to Annie first. She's at the top of the list. Go ahead, Annie.
Okay, thank you.
What do you think about all this?
And again, Michelle, you are amazing that you survived all of these terrible incidents. Is amazing, and I can just feel your strength. You're such a strong person because of what you've been through and because of the way you came out of it. I have something in common with you in that I gave my child up for adoption when
okay.
I was 18. And
okay.
However, I changed my mind about 4 months later, and I was able to get him back. And so
wonderful.
I had a happy ending with that.
Wonderful.
But that was,
I'm happy to hear that.
That's
it's
unusual.
So hard, you know, to, yeah.
That's unusual, you know, to be able to get your baby back. Because once
yeah,
you sign
I'm
those
happy
papers,
to hear that.
Yeah, I'm happy that someone was able to do that because I'm sure that there are people other than yourself that give their child up. I mean, Michelle kept thinking about, you know, celebrating birthdays and all this other stuff. And, you know, there's times maybe when they realize, hey, I made a mistake. That child was a part of me, and I want to love it, and I want it to love me back, because that would be true love. That would be real love, real love from your child.
Yeah, I
can, and
well,
they
yeah,
can't
Steph,
get
I couldn't
it,
do that.
You know?
I couldn't
no,
do that.
No.
Mm-mm. Not
well,
the life I was living in. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to go down to Roberta, because we're running out of time here. Okay, Roberta, go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah, I all I can think about right now is that because there was, because I was, I think my life had been conjured by a cult to begin with, you know, and I was used for ill-gotten gain reasons all my life, you know, and paganism, the cult, witchcraft, and everything, but it was secretly, you know, I mean, it was all, I mean. Like, I'm just thinking it's like this nightmare. I'm going to wake up out of it, you know, eventually, and it's going to, you know, there's some of the people that say they've been saved and they belong to Jesus, but, you know, it says even Satan can come as an angel of light, you know, and then they're really the synagogue of Satan. So I don't know whether to believe them or not, I'm just believing that I've already prayed. And I'm going through deliverance and restoration, and I'm not completely out of it completely because I still get attacked a lot. But at least I know that I have my sanity now and that I'm on higher ground, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
I need to say something, what she just shared.
Yeah, good to
it. Okay. Sheep's come in wolves. You know, wolves can come in sheep's clothing. But I always say to people, they say, well, how do you know this? They don't question me because they know who I used to be. And so I tell them, Satan is not about love. Satan is not about good. Satan is not about comfort. And I say Satan, I'm talking about hell. Hell itself. They're not about comfort. They're not about the light. They're not about good. They're not about love. They're not about positive. They're about negative. The difference of how you know is when you feel love and when you start receiving blessings. Hell don't give blessings. Hell's not going to give you nothing good. You can absolutely know the difference between a good person who says they're a Christian and evil. There's evil, 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 evil even has a smell. See, I'm a triple threat to hell. They hate when I wake up every morning. They know I know their ways. They know I know what they look like. They know I know what they smell like. And here's the good news. Why Satan, I'm on his radar of the most hatred of all in hell. He can't touch me because I've been marked by God. I've been marked by the blood of the Lamb.
Hallelujah.
So I got angels all around me. So my purpose today is to kill, steal, and destroy the devil. So that's why the Lord tells me I have to put my book out. I have to let the world know the ways, the fouls, the lies of Satan. Satan is not only, when I hear people say, Satan's a liar, I say, don't say that. He's a father of lies. Say that, because he is a father of lies. Hell itself goes to and fro to see who they can devour. Because why? Because when they used to be in heaven and they got thrown out of heaven, they can never go back to heaven. They can never live there. See, as long as we're breathing as humans and you wake up the next day, you got an opportunity to surrender to God, to ask for the Lord to come into your life or get a second chance. You still got a chance to go to heaven. Hell don't ever have a chance to go to heaven. They're in hell right now, and their end is the lake of fire. with a snatching of teeth and burning forever and ever and ever. That's hell. And they're going to the lake of fire. So that's why demons and Satan himself go to and fro to see who they can devour. They are a manipulator. They are a con artist. They are a liar. They are a cheater. You know, that's why they have their different entities out there, the Jezebels, the Ahabs. It's a lot. Maybe we got to do a show one day where I really go into depth in that. But hell is real. But let me tell you something. I only fear God. Satan himself can't touch me. He can't touch me. I've been marked by God. I'm chosen to tell the truth for the Lord. And that's what I do. I fear nothing but God. And Satan and his imps don't come over here messing with me. I don't allow them to occupy my space. I don't allow them to occupy my mind. We got power over the kingdom of hell. All you have to do is plead the name of Jesus and the blood, and they got to go. And if they're in your house, because I've been hired to come and do exorcism in homes, been doing it for years, and I tell them, people, you allow these demons to come running havoc, reckless up in your house, you better plead the name of Jesus, and you better plead the blood, and you call your angels that are assigned to you, and they'll go to war for you, and they will remove those things. And then you can also pick up your Bible and read the book of Revelation, beginning at chapter 18. And you pick that Bible up, and you go to the book of Revelation, and you read it out loud in your home or whatever them demons are at, even if they're in your mind. You read chapter 18 and on. Guess what's going to happen? They're going to run. They're going to run. They can't stand that. That's power against the enemy. Revelation 18 to the end, and they run when you start reading that. Why? Because it reminds them of where they're going at the end. They don't want to hear that. They run, they flee. Satan don't have no power. You can put your foot on the neck of the devil.
He's a fallen angel. That's what he is. He's a fallen angel.
Yes,
he's Satan. He was Lucifer before. And once he got down to hell, he became Satan. See, I was in the prayer group, too. I was in the prayer group, and we went and did the same thing in people's homes and so forth. I was in the prayer group.
Yeah, that's what I'm there for to do.
And I had a priest with us. But, it's real. See, that's
door,
the thing.
I started hearing them scream. If God opened your spiritual eyes and your spiritual ears, you can hear them. They got the screaming. They said, no, it's her. It's her. Here she come. Here she come. Yeah, here I am in the name of Jesus and in the blood of Jesus. You got to go. You got to go.
You see, let me say something because the show is almost over. Okay?
We've got
about 5 minutes, I guess.
No, go ahead.
People out there don't understand that there is heaven. There is purgatory. My son thinks we're in purgatory right now. And what we do now is whether we go to heaven or hell. He might be right. We might have lived in another time zone, you know what I'm saying? And then this is like our last chance. Who knows? But I do know one thing, that the evil in people, you see it. It's all around us. It's all around us. And that's why this world is in such a freaking, and I will say freaking, mess, all right? It's because of the evilness of other
people. Everything that is not good is the devil. Y'all remember that. Everything that is not good, don't be confused. It's the devil. God is about love, goodness, comfort, peace, joy. Satan is about evil, misery, darkness, negativity, despair, lust, envy, wrath. That belongs to the devil. He goes to and fro to see who he can devour, because the world belongs to him, but he don't own it. See, God gives free will. He's not going to make you choose him. He's not going to force you to serve him. And he's not going to make you love him. That's why there's a spiritual warfare that's going on right now, and it doesn't stop, it doesn't cease, and it doesn't sleep. There's a battle going on for mankind against good and evil. God give free will, because Satan says, Satan got free will now because he allowed it during the time of Job. And that's another story.
That's
read the book, Job.
Okay,
So now God said, okay, I'm going to give free will to mankind. So that means everything you do is being written. So if they see, Satan is a deceiver. He's a deceiver. He's going to manipulate. For men, he knows men, they lust, perversion, all that. All that belongs to the devil. Sexual child abuse belongs to the devil. Rape belongs to the devil. So he'll send his pretty little Jezebels out there for the men, and then he'll send them handsome little Ahabs for the woman. Beware. Beware of false prophets. Beware of someone saying they serve the Lord. You can tell when a person is serving God. Why? Because God's light will shine on them. And when there is no light, it's the devil.
That's right. Now, we can't talk
glad,
more about that
one thing,
right now.
And I'm going to give the rest of you, Carol, and that is this. Okay. I'm glad I shared my story. Anyone that's listening, read Jeremiah 29, verse 11 through 14. That's Jeremiah 29, verses 11 through 14, and read Psalms 91. And if no one can tell you that they love you today, know that God loves you, and I love you, and Carol loves you. And if you ever want to talk to me, if you ever want to send me a shout-out, if you ever need someone as a listening ear, just for me to listen, you can feel free to reach me at area code 513-212-5429. If you can't remember that, go on our website, look up Minister Michelle Bless, and you will see my email and phone number. And that's it.
That's it. Now, I want people to realize something. I want people to realize something. That was not fanaticism, what she was saying. That's truth. That's reality. That's why you see goodness in the world and you see evil. And there is a spiritual warfare going on. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
And I've walked down a lot of the same roads that Michelle has. Not all of them, no. And I wouldn't want to either. And I probably would be in jail, Michelle, because I would be the one that would have picked up the gun and shot someone. Because,
I'm sorry,
you know,
Carol. I'm sorry, Carol.
You know, bull is bull. And I you take enough bull and you just can't take it anymore, all right? You know what I'm saying? But, mm-hmm. you know, okay, that's all right, because I went from my dark side to my light side, and I walk in the light, too. And I know that that's a smart way to be, okay?
Amen.
So tonight was a very interesting show. Annie, do you not think it was interesting?
Yes, I think it was very interesting. It opened my eyes to a lot of things I didn't know about.
Yeah, you bet. Well, let me go down to Roberta. Roberta, do you think it was interesting?
Yes, and I'm very glad that, Michelle, you survived what you went through and that you're at where you're at today, and you've been really helpful for me tonight. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And, Roberta, anytime you want to talk, I sent my number on the website, but if my sister's here, for anyone, feel free to call me or text me. I will respond. You're not alone.
What time zone are you in?
Right now, my time is... It's going on 9:30 my time.
Oh, okay. So you're an hour ahead. Okay.
But it don't matter what time. For anyone who wants to call me.
Oh, okay.
Call me.
Okay.
Call or text.
All right.
I will respond.
Thank you.
Michelle, let me put this out there. We have the contact list on the front page of NASCA. And on that contact list, you'll find Michelle's name. You'll find my name. And I have a bunch of other names. But so if you can't remember what she just said, you didn't write it down, whatever, just go to the contact list, so right on the front page here, and you'll be able to talk to her. Okay, I just got the 90-second cue. Remember, people out there, we are walking in all kinds of different directions today. A lot of evil out there, a lot of people that are mean. Look what's happening. I don't have to say things to you. Use common sense. Open up your eyes, and what do you see? Okay? And, you know, this isn't the way it's supposed to be. And so I hope it changes soon, because too many people are dying. Too many people are just being are hungry, cold. Oh, my God, being shot in the head. Who needs this? I don't know. I don't need it. And, yes, there is heaven. I do believe that there is purgatory and there is hell. That's the truth. So, with that, I'll leave. I think we had a very interesting show. We'll be back tomorrow again and speaking about other topics. And so good night. God bless. And talk to you soon. Bye.
Good night.
Bye.
Good night, everybody.
Another tomorrow.
Yes, sir.